Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Do you have the time to listen to me whine about nothing or everything all I want? Hey, this is Scott Foster, Jason's college roommate, and you are listening to Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast, where we are covering live throwing... just being handed something here. Hold on. Wait a minute. Okay, sorry. We are not covering live. That was... we have to do a retraction from last week's episode. Apparently, we are covering Green Day today, but we have Jeff Johnson with us. That's also incorrect information. Wait a minute. What happened here?
What's going on? All right. So here's the deal. When you have guests on, you got to work around their schedule. And sometimes when you're not a great planner like myself, those schedules can get mixed up. And so talked to Brad Moore. He wasn't able to do it this week. So I called an audible, talked to Jeff Johnson, our good buddy, who's been on many times, and asked him, hey, do you want to do Dookie with us, Green Day? He's like, heck yeah, man, let's do it. He's been listening to the album. And I'm like, great. And we talked about the days and here we are. And I'm like, hey, Jeff, you ready to go? He's like, dude, I can't do it today. We're talking about next week. So that's my fault. That was totally my fault. I blew it. But
we're on a deadline at this point.
We are.
So we will have to proceed without Jeff. So this episode will be about 2/3 as long as it would have been, I guess.
Well, and Jeff's a podcaster at the Film By Podcast. He understands how these things are, and he has graciously let me off the hook. Jeff, once again, I'm sorry. We'll see you again down the road, I'm sure, very soon. But, D, you and I are back in 1994. This is our second album as we go through 5 weeks of albums of 1994.
Yes.
This is our second one. We're covering Green Day, Dookie.
I got no motivation. Where is my motivation? No time for the motivation.
Dookie. Also, poop.
Yes, that's right.
Diarrhea poop.
Yes. I had a kid in my neighborhood growing up. My dog's name was Duke, and he used to like to tease me by calling him Dookie. I didn't like that at all.
Yeah. So speaking of that name, it relates directly to the album cover. Have you looked at this album cover?
Not in detail.
Okay, so the album cover is a art, if you want to call it that. It's an artistic piece by a guy named Richie Bucher, B-U-C-H-E-R,
okay,
who had done things like this for other bands that Green Day was familiar with and was kind of a friend of the band, even played in some bands himself. But when they told him what the title of the album was, he just went with that, and he always associated Dookie or poop with monkeys and dogs. And so this album cover is filled with monkeys and dogs dropping Dookie bombs or considering throwing the poop at somebody. And then in addition to that, it is populated with these various things like the lady from the Black Sabbath album, the original Black Sabbath album. Angus Young of AC/DC is
what?
On there.
Really?
The murder of the co-founder of the Black Panther Party, Huey P. Newton.
Mess up your Black Panther Party.
If you look at his picture on Wikipedia, it's that guy from Forrest Gump.
I mean, really?
He's totally... that guy, yes.
Wow.
The Sather Tower, and then like a bunch of friends that they had, you know, just a little drawings. And it's so tiny, you can't tell what's going on. Patti Smith is on there with her unshaved armpits. It is really a creative piece. And the record execs were like, hey, these are three pretty good looking guys. We want their picture to be on it. And they said, no, that is not us because we're punk.
On my own, here we go.
Right, they're punk.
These are the guys that brought back punk to the mainstream. We did Billy Idol last year. He was the guy that kind of brought punk to the mainstream in the 80s, and these are the guys that brought it back in the 90s. Last year we talked about the nerds coming into the mainstream, and now we have the misfits coming back into the mainstream.
You know, this is like power punk pop.
That's a lot of P's.
You know, you've got the punk attitude with the Beatles-like melody.
Yeah.
It's no wonder why these guys were so successful. I told you that they've got a case for being one of the biggest bands of the 90s.
Yeah. This album is typically on any 100 list of best albums of the 90s, for sure. Interesting fact, Good Riddance was actually recorded for this album.
I was going to drop that bomb on you.
Yeah, it was recorded for this album. They just decided to save it.
How much more would this album have been with that song on here?
I don't know that you can have more than what this album was. This album was, as the cover presents, a nuclear bomb.
It really was. Okay, so this is released February 1st, 1994. I want to just drop you in 94, what happened on February 1st, okay?
Okay, yeah.
So this is just, you know, a couple of months after Jack Nicholson attacks a car with a golf club. Remember that?
I do kind of remember that.
Remember that? He went crazy. On February 1st, 1994, Jeff Galooly pleads guilty.
Oh, yeah. We had the... Why?
Yes.
From last, yeah. Tanya Harding's boyfriend pleads guilty to smashing Nancy Kerrigan's kneecap.
In exchange for turning dirt on Tanya Harding.
Yeah.
Also on February 1st, 1994, Harry Styles of One Direction is born.
It's weird.
That makes you feel
weird.
Old,
yeah. Right? It's old, yeah.
Okay, so Green Day's Dookie comes out February 1st, 1994.
Yeah.
We're going to dive into this album now?
Let's go, man. I'm ready to jump in. Okay, first song on the album is called Burnout. I declare I don't care no more. I'm running up and out and growing bored. In my smoke-jack boring room. My hair is shaking. Okay, this song comes in with a hard punk beat right out of the gate. Brat. Bang.
I know, I've got crackling drums, speedy beat. Very pop punk.
Yep, this is angsty, it's speedy, this is all things punk that you want. And then of course it's about the character's idea that life just sucks. You know, this is just kind of boring, life sucks, a kind of lyrics which punk and more punk,
right? Apathy, rejecting responsibility, laying around, being bored.
Yeah. So this is what their life was like before they hit it big, right? They lived in a tiny little blue collar, you know, what I don't think it was even fully organized as a town. Rodeo in Berkeley, yeah.
It's just like three towns. They're all small, not a lot going on. Like part of it was unincorporated.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's an unincorporated town. And Billy and Mike eventually would meet there. Billy grew up in this town. I think he moved out there when he was about 3 or 4 years old. He was the youngest of six kids and was babied by his sisters. His oldest brother was 21 years older than him, which means his mother was closer to his brother's age than he was to his brother's age. She'd had him at like 18 or 19 years old.
Wow.
She came from Oklahoma, by the way, moved out during the war to help with armaments and stuff like that.
I did hear that they had some Oklahoma roots.
Yeah, she's an Oklahoma girl, moved out to California, and his dad was a Golden Gloves boxer, like was a powerhouse of a guy.
Yeah.
And also, throwback to last week's episode with Weezer, his dad was a drummer. Did jazz drumming. And so cute little baby Billy Joe got all of the attention, but he also got a lot. Both of the parents were musical, and he got a lot of their abilities too. Started singing when he was very young. Actually ended up pressing an album when he was just a little kid.
I told you, he's like a prodigy. Like, his voice is spot on, sounds great. And they're like, how do you like making a record? I love it.
5-year-old Billy Joe Armstrong, Look for Love is the name of the song.
Yeah, you know, he's like 6 years old and singing. And then a few years later, he gets a guitar, starts playing guitar. At 8 years old, he is touring around with his dad playing drums, like they're tight. And then tragically, just a couple years later, when he's 10, his dad realizes he has cancer, and this mountain of a man withers away over the next 4 months and passes away. It had to be a very tough childhood.
I walk a lonely road, the only one that I have ever known.
Esophageal cancer.
Yeah.
It said 3 months between the time he was diagnosed and the time he was dead.
Yeah. Well, very fortuitously, very interestingly, the month that his dad passed away, he met a guy named Mike.
Yes, Mike Pritchard was in his fifth grade class at school.
Yeah. Now, Mike had been adopted as a baby. His mother was a foster mother, gotten a call that they needed to place a baby somewhere, just 6 weeks old, and she and her husband ended up adopting him. She and her husband split up. He had an older sister, and he went to live with his dad for a while, but ultimately the mother and the dad had enough bad interactions that the mother was able to get full custody. And that's when they went out to California and where Mike met Billy Joe.
Yep. I heard him described as skinny, loud, and obnoxious. And you might know him more as Mike Durnt.
Yeah.
Which I thought this was a hilarious story. The Durnt comes from him screwing around on his bass going like, okay, what if we did this? Durnt.
Yep.
Durnt, Durnt.
That's how he got the name Durnt.
Yeah, and so they became buddies in fifth grade. Billy Joe had to wait for him to kind of get his chops to get up to speed by about seventh grade.
Yeah, well, they were both playing guitar, right? They had two guitarists and a drummer, and then they got a guy to come in and play bass. And the guy that had come in and play bass is named Sean. And then Sean, you know, like kids do, had to go to the dentist or something during practice.
Oh,
and so he leaves and they're sitting around and Billy Joe says to Mike, hey, why don't you try to play the bass? And he picks it up. They start playing. And he said, I looked at him and he looked at me and instantly we knew he was the new bass player.
That's good.
And he was kind of bummed out about it because he was like, I don't get to play guitar anymore. But then Billy Joe's brother was like, hey, man, you're not a rhythm guitarist. You're a lead bass player.
Yeah.
And that was enough to change him.
Well, and the bass features prominently in a particular hit we're going to talk about here in a few minutes.
Sure. I mean, the bass on these songs, I mean, number one, this is a 3-man band.
Yeah.
Every single member is critical. And we know that Billy writes a lot of the songs, but there is no question that the bass is a huge part of this. And I would say Mike is one of the best bass players that I've heard play from the guys in the 90s.
Really?
Yeah. I'm putting him up there with Flea. He's Flea, guy from Primus.
Wow.
Mike Durnt.
Okay. And you and I talked about this. Their early influences, Motley Crue, Van Halen, Kiss, Def Leppard.
Billy Joe said when he was 13 years old, his sister took him to a few concerts, took him like this. So that he was born in 72. So this would have been about 85.
Right.
Took him to see REM, mm-hmm. 10,000 Maniacs.
Okay.
And The Replacements.
Okay.
And he became a huge Replacements fan, became a fan of Husker Du as well. But he said when he heard these songs, this was an entirely different reaction. I mean, he obviously loved the metal songs, but these songs that these bands were playing hit him on an emotional level, and that heavily influenced how he would write his own songs later on.
Okay, we ready for the next song in the album?
Yeah, let's do it. Song number two is called Having a Blast.
Take it, all you tell with me.
Okay, so this was a little rough, okay, in this day and age. Now, this says, talking all you down with me, explosive duct tape to my spine, nothing's going to change my mind, I won't listen to anyone's last words, there's nothing left for you to say, soon you'll be dead anyway.
So close your eyes and get yourself goodbye. Think about the times we spent and what they've been. It's nothing. It's nothing.
No one is getting out of here alive. This played okay in 1994.
Right.
Wasn't a big deal.
Right.
Because it would be another 5 years before Columbine happened.
That's right.
And now it's the most uncomfortable song on the album.
No doubt about it. This song was written in Cleveland in June of 92.
Uh-huh.
And it was way before that homicidal epidemic that we went through in the 90s.
Yeah.
We even had a guy at OU came to a football game and blew himself up.
I was there for that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. We thought the cannons had gone off at the wrong time.
That's right.
Yeah.
So once Billy Joe and Mike discovered punk, that really lit the fuse.
Yeah, they had really gelled as a band. I've seen them in you know, the old high school talent shows, and they were still playing very much rock and roll kind of music. But punk was a new way to think about things. And this was interesting because, you know, we talked about how rock and roll and heavy metal was the thing of L.A., right? Sunset Strip.
Yeah.
You've got Guns N' Roses. You've got Motley Crue. You got all of those
Rat
guys.
And Dokken and all those guys.
All
yeah.
those guys down in L.A. But they're up near the Bay Area. And San Francisco was where you had the punk scene. And by the 90s, the punk scene had spilled over into those kind of blue-collar suburbs of the Bay Area, what they call the East Bay. And there was this contingent of kids who would go to these clubs and listen to and play punk music. And he said when he fell in with them, it was like he met his people, right? Like, these were the people that he just gelled with. And so that really became their form of music. But that club, which was 924 Gilman Street, they called it the Gilman Club.
Okay.
They wouldn't let them play when they first started because their music was too melodic. Like, it was too pop even at the beginning.
Wow.
But eventually they changed their drummer.
So I heard Billy Joe Armstrong talking about initially when they first started out, he thought his brother was going to be the drummer for the band.
Right.
And they thought, hey, we're going to be like this Van Halen thing, right? Where I'm going to play guitar, you're going to play drums, and we're going to go be Van Halen.
Yeah.
But that didn't work out, and so...
Yeah, they picked a guy up who had been playing with another band. His name was John Kiffmeyer, but that guy had played plenty of times over at the Gilman. And so with him drumming for their band, number one, they were better because he was a more experienced drummer. But number two, he gave them the street cred to get in. Now, here's the problem. They go on with him, they record a couple of EPs, and then he's like, guys, I think I'm going to go study. I think I'm going to go to school.
It's college time for me.
Yeah. And they're like, but you're our drummer. Right. We're a three-man band. We don't have an extra drummer.
Yeah.
We are not Sticks.
Right. So at this point, they're Sweet Children. That's the name of the band.
Yeah, which it was in the name of one of their songs. But yeah, at that time, the band was called Sweet Children.
You talked about the EPs that they released, right? Mm-hmm. They released an EP in 1988.
Yep.
They released one in 1990. These guys are born in 1972. They're 16, 17, 18 years old at this time.
Yeah.
And in fact, before they could go on tour, they waited for Mike to graduate from high school. Billy Joe dropped out. He's like, I'm out. I know what I'm doing.
Right.
And so they're class of 90 guys. But as soon, like the day after Mike Dirnt graduated from high school, they were
on tour.
Off and touring.
Yeah. So they've lost their drummer. Now, interesting, these two EPs that they've done with an independent record label. That record label is called Lookout Records.
Right.
The guy who started Lookout Records was a guy who's also playing punk, and his band was called Lookout.
That's right.
Now, he's an older guy. He was born in like 49 or something like that. So he's older,
yeah.
My dad's age. You know, these guys are close to my age. This guy was close to my dad's age.
Yeah.
But he's got this record label and he's got this band. He had gotten started in music and wanted to do a record label and wanted to have a band, but he loved punk. This baby boomer loved punk.
Right.
And so the community that he was in near Berkeley, California, was a bunch of old hippies who are all into their own, you know, Jefferson Airplane and Jimi Hendrix kind of music.
Sure.
And so he hits up this kind of wild kid, son of his neighbors, who's just going nuts. And he's like, man, maybe this kid will, you know, he's not got his influences of music yet. Maybe I can hit him up. Kid, try these drums out.
That's right. His name is Frank Wright,
yeah.
Otherwise known as Trey Cool.
Trey Cool. Which, I mean, we've learned from the Sex Pistols that you get a cool name when you become a punk rocker.
Right.
You are allowed to change your name, and it can be something very cool, and it can be Trey Cool, if you will.
Yeah, that's right. I did see that he's Frank Wright III,
mm-hmm.
So he was actually, they called him Trey.
Yeah.
I did think it was funny. So they just recruited him to be a drummer. He didn't know how to play drums.
12 years old.
Hey, come play drums for us.
12. That's crazy. So Trey Cool had been playing with Lookout, this band, for some time. Now Green Day has lost their drummer. Lookout obviously is having some success with these albums. And so Larry Liverpool, the guy who is the old guy who owns the band and the record label.
Larry Liverpool. Yeah.
Larry Liverpool. His name's Larry Hayes. Larry Liverpool was his punk name,
of course,
based upon a nuclear power plant, I believe, in the California area.
Okay.
And he says, well, maybe Trey can play for you guys. And man, when that magic happened, the Trinity was formed.
That's it. You know, you mentioned the name Green Day. They actually changed their name from Sweet Children to Green Day like a couple of days before their EP was released.
Oh, yeah. Larry had seen them playing live and he was like, oh my gosh, you guys are fantastic. Do you want to make an album? And they were like, yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah, I guess.
And they walk in and they're like, hey, we're changing our name. And he's like, what? No, everybody knows you as Sweet Child. Why would you change your name? Well, there was another band in the area called Sweet Baby, and they didn't want to get confused with that band. And so they decided, hey, you know, we spend many of our days in the green, if you will.
Yeah, you and I were talking about that. I was like, what the heck does that mean? You had to explain it to me.
Yeah, Jason the Baptist member of the podcast did not know what a Green Day was. And so, yeah, that Green Day comes from the idea of a day where you just sit around doing nothing but smoking marijuana
there
all
you
day.
Go.
So they become Green Day. They have Trey Cool. I think we are now ready to hear song number 3, Chump.
Okay, before we go any further, D, there are 15 songs on this album. It adds up to 38 minutes.
Yeah, this is, you're lucky if you get a song over 3 minutes on this album.
Oh my gosh, they're so quick.
Yeah,
right?
They are. But that's a punk signature
it
move,
is.
Right?
It is.
It is. And yeah, this one, I mean, short to the point. This one is, nope, not quite 3 minutes long. Nope, two and something.
That's right.
But this one, I love how it starts off. I don't know you, but I think I hate you. This is a great little place that we probably have all have been, where you see somebody and you're like, I don't know what that is about that guy's face, but I just want to punch it. And then of course this guy kind of realizes the error of his ways by the end of the song, and he's like, maybe it's me, maybe I'm just jealous,
maybe I'm the chump. Yeah,
this is the first song that he mentions Amanda in.
I know. Amanda is the former girlfriend who ran off, broke up with him, joined the Peace Corps, and moved away. Mm-hmm. Right before Dookie took off.
Dumb. How'd it go on the Peace Corps, Amanda?
Right.
How's that case of malaria clearing up?
Enjoy Ecuador. Hey, you know, Billy Joe Armstrong recorded like 16 or 17 songs. The vocals took 2 days. Most of the songs he took one take.
Yeah.
He just jumped in, fired it out there.
You know, we talk many times about the 10,000 hours. This is a guy who's been singing since he was 4 years old. So, yeah, he was a very young man, like 21, when they recorded this album.
Yeah.
But that means he'd been singing for 17 years.
Sure, sure.
That's pretty, you got your 10,000 hours in a couple times over on that.
That's right.
And he was obsessed with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's a guy who could do it.
You know, this song was one they had to re-record because they had this tape hiss that they could not get rid of.
Yeah. And this is kind of an interesting thing about the Gilman Club. This was, you know, there was a very strict criteria, obviously, because they couldn't get in initially because they were too melodic in their
right.
in their music.
Right.
But it also went the other way, that if you became too successful, then you weren't punk enough anymore. And ultimately that you would get banned from the club for being sellout, which is absolutely what came with this album. But part of that was this idea that, do we want to have a tape hiss on our record? No, we want our record to sound good. We
right.
want it to sound full. They had recorded these other two EPs in a day or two. This one, they got to sit in and kind of soak in it and spend some time experimenting with tones and sounds. And I mean, I got to say, most of the guitar in each of these songs sounds pretty much the same. Like, it's that same tone.
Sure.
But they found that magic tone that they wanted by having an opportunity to spend time in a professional recording studio.
All right, so before we go any further, in 1992, they released an album called Kerplunk. I love these album
sensing
titles, right?
Sensing a theme here.
Yeah. But that's when they really started to take off. They got some traction. They sold out the first 10,000 copies of that album. And you talked about how if you're too successful in the punk scene, you're rejected because you're a sellout. But once that album had come out and been a success, the big record companies started come calling. And so they ended up signing with Reprise Records,
which is an arm of
Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Right. Did you read that story about the executive who wanted them to come to his office and meet with him?
No.
So this record exec named Weiss wanted them to come to Warner Brothers, and let's talk about the marketing for this album. And he knew they were a punk band, and he expected them to be like, you know, Johnny Rotten and Sid Vicious, these a-hole, you know.
Right. Spit on you guys.
Yeah. Right, right. Punch you in the face type of guys. And when he got there, he was like, these guys are just kids. They're intimidated. They really don't even want to be here. Like, they're scared of this meeting with me. But he found them to be kind of sweet guys, you know. He sat down, he talked about it. He's like, okay, for Dookie, I think our goal should be 200,000 records sold. Well, they far outshot that.
Yeah.
10 million copies sold.
Yeah. And when they had been with Lookout, they were Lookout's biggest success because they sold 10,000.
Right.
They sold 10,000, like, the first day it was pressed. I mean, it was like the Lookout was having trouble keeping up with the demand for the record. Uh-huh. And they're literally, I mean, this is a tiny little record company, and these guys are just touring around, but it's incredible, the word of mouth. Billy Joe comes home at one point, he was like, I couldn't believe it. We were in Ohio, and people were singing the words that I wrote. That's incredible.
Well, let's get to the first single on the album. First really big song here.
I mean, not having had this album, I just got to say, these first three songs were the scrolling prologue to the album.
Right.
And now is when we get the Star Destroyer looming over.
Right.
As it comes down, crashing in. This is song number 4, Longview.
I said,
this one comes in at a whopping 3 minutes and 52 seconds. No wonder they called it Longview.
Okay, so this was not a single, okay? This is the same thing we talked about last week with Weezer, and we're going to talk about it again with Live. They didn't actually release physical singles because they wanted to drive album sales.
Yeah, well, they had the benefit of MTV, and with MTV, if you had a video, it was better than a single.
That's right.
To get people interested in your band. And I'll read this lyric to you. See, you tell me what you think is going on here. Bite my lip and close my eyes. Take me away to paradise. I'm so damn bored. I'm going blind. What do you think he's doing?
Does the term spanking the monkey mean anything to you?
Well, could be. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
All of these songs are about laying around doing nothing but
spanking the monkey.
And drugs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Which, what is great is that when they made this video, they did it in the house that they used to hang out and play together
in.
Right? It's like, literally, this is what I used to do in this chair in this video that I'm about to destroy.
This is the same thing the Weezer did. We talked about that last week.
Yeah.
And at the end of this video, he takes a knife and he's like gutting that couch, and there's feathers flying everywhere and the music's crashing. First of all, this is a killer hit, right? This reached number 1 on the modern rock charts. It's just such a great pop punk song.
I love how on this song that you have this blended transition from the last song as the drums come in.
Right.
Because the drums on this one are so, to start off with, are not punk. You've got the toms coming in.
It's like a groove.
It is a very groovy mix. And I've listened to Trey Cool talk. You know, I've seen drummers like, who was your most influential guy? Trey Cool said Ringo Starr, which you just don't hear that too often.
Sure.
But then the next question is obviously, well, why? And he said, well, because he didn't try to stand out and be some sort of rock star drummer. He played the drums that fit the song. And that's what I've tried to do with all of our songs, is I try to make the drums accentuate what the song is. Not, hey, look at me, I'm playing some incredibly good drums.
Right.
And he nails it on this one. This is great. I love this, the drum beat on this one.
Yep. Bassist Mike Dirnt said that he wrote the signature bass line while high on LSD.
So They've got this song. They've got it written.
Right.
And there's more than just these guys in the house, right? They've got friends over or whatever.
Right.
But Billy Joe is like, we can't, you know, I can't. Mike is saying, I can't figure out the bass line. Billy's like, I don't know what it is. Like, they're not figuring it out. So Billy goes and watches a movie. Goes to the movies, goes and watches a movie. And he comes back, and everyone in the house is tripping balls on LSD. and he says, Mike is just sitting in the floor, you know, kind of out of it, zen-like. And he's like, oh, I got the bass line. He's like, oh, man, okay, let's hear it. He says he plays it, and he's like, oh, that's it. And then he spends the rest of the night worried that he's going to forget it because of the drugs. But God bless him. Next day, he got up and he remembered it completely sober. So that's how we get this awesome, awesome bass line. He
probably made millions of dollars from that LSD hit right there.
Well, him and the Beatles. I mean, I don't know what to say.
That's it.
Yep.
This song was
Don't do drugs, kids.
That's right. This song named after Longview, Washington.
Okay.
I don't know what happened there, but there you go. This video was nominated for 3 MTV Music Awards. Best Group Video, Best Alternative Video, and Best New Artist. These guys literally became a success, a mainstream success overnight. Okay, so this was the first big hit from this album.
Yeah, this broke them.
Right, definitely. So they leave 2 weeks after the release of Dookie. They go on tour using Trey Cool's dad's bookmobile as their tour bus, right?
Uh-huh.
They started so low on the totem pole, and they're touring around. Oh, okay, we'll play this kegger, you know, for a couple of beers and $20 or whatever.
They just wanted to play.
They're playing anywhere and everywhere. Meanwhile, MTV starts to play the crap out of their video, right?
Right.
I thought it was interesting. Trey Cool's dad said, I watched these guys write the song. They practiced it in my living room. I thought, hey, this is pretty cool. I mean, they're having fun. They're doing stuff. Because it's one thing for people to really like their songs, which I was kind of blown away about, and then for them to buy it. He goes, I just couldn't believe that the songs that they were playing in my living room became this worldwide phenomenon. He's like, I still don't know how all this happened. It's a pretty incredible story.
Yeah. Okay. Time to move on to another fantastic song. This one is a remake of a song that appeared on their Kerplunk album. This song is called Welcome to Paradise. Okay, so have you ever heard the song Hello Mudda, Hello Fada?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the 90s version of that song.
Okay.
So when they moved out of their parents' homes,
right,
it wasn't just a cheap house that they lived in. It was an abandoned house. Like, they weren't paying rent. They were squatting.
Uh-huh.
So when I say there were other people at the house, there were probably some drug-addled bums and other stuff. You couldn't go out at night. You could go play some street basketball during the day, but it was a dangerous part of town that these guys were living in.
It was an abandoned house.
Yeah. So the first part of the song, he's writing to his mother, telling her, how awful it is there. And then 6 months later, he's writing to her at the end of the song saying what a great place this is.
I know, right?
Paradise, tongue in cheek, becomes actual paradise.
This was the third song released to radio. We talked about how there weren't physical singles in the U.S.
Right. UK had some physical singles, but not in the U.S., right?
They released this to radio October 17th in 94. This was originally recorded on Kerplunk, which you just mentioned. Kerplunk was Green Day's second album. They re-recorded it and re-released it in 94. This is a fun song. I love it.
Oh, yeah. And the talk about a melodic chorus on this one. You know, the verse on this one, you know, it pushes through and it's rhythmic. But when you get to the chorus on this song, it is an absolute hook. I love it.
You know, we talked about how it's speed drums, it's power chords, it's fast paced. But the melodies are what makes the songs.
Absolutely. This video has Matt Bernalini Olpin in it, and he gets kicked in the face in this video.
Okay.
Now, if you don't know who this is, he is a founding member of the punk band Link 80. And he is a co-creator of some filmmaking productions, including Chad, Matt, and Rob, and Radio Silence. But is best known for working in horror films, including VHS, Southbound, Ready or Not, Scream, Scream 6, and Abagnale. So he's been around, and he gets to get kicked in the face in a Green Day video.
Oh, well, good for him.
He said that the papers, like in the video, it's a live performance, and there's like fires on stage. He said all of those papers were like newspaper articles that were talking about Green Day, and so they decided to just burn them.
Okay. Yeah. All right, we ready for the next one?
Yeah.
The next song in the album is called Pulling Teeth.
So this is what was the name of the movie where Tom Hanks directed where it was like the band?
That Thing You Do.
That Thing You Do.
Yeah.
This has that kind of poppy little beat, happy little melody, and just happens to be about a guy getting the crap beat out of him by his girlfriend or wife.
Right. I totally agree with you. It feels very like Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, the Archies.
The Archies, yeah, you know? Yeah. Just strumming the guitar. It's not speedy punk rock or anything like that. They were very influenced by the Beatles.
Yeah.
In fact, Trey Cool said that Please Please Me was the album that this is kind of modeled after.
Right.
All the songs are short. They get right to the point, just like the Beatles' Please Please Me.
There you go.
Check out our buddies Def Dave and Jackson Wright at the Apples and Oranges podcast.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, you said it's about a guy getting the crap beat out of him by his girlfriend. This was inspired by a pillow fight that Mike Dirnt had with his girlfriend.
Oh, that's right. Like, broke his arm or something like that in a pillow fight.
That's it.
Well, hey, it happens. It's not a laughing matter for the victim here.
I'm going to give a quick shout out to my college buddy and current Patreon member Cameron Eckert in college. He got his nose destroyed in a pillow fight, and he got a fist right across the nose. So it can happen.
Yeah. Pillows are dangerous things, boys and girls. Be careful out
there.
That's
it. Hey, I want to talk about something real quick. One of the places that they played while Dookie is on its ascension, they played Woodstock 94.
Yeah.
And when they got on stage, it had been raining and wet and muddy, and they were not really welcomed by the crowd, and so they started mud slinging at them.
Yeah.
And in
these are punk guys. They're ready for that.
So they're throwing it back at them. And then the people encourage them more. And so there's just like this mud fight between Green Day and the fans.
At some point, Billy Joe picks up one of the pieces and puts the mud in his mouth.
Puts it in his mouth.
After that, all hell breaks loose.
People start climbing on stage. A security guard full on football tackles Mike Dirnt, thinking he had climbed on the stage. Yes. You can see, like, on the video, he decks him like a linebacker.
He knocked out his front teeth on the monitor. He knocked out his front teeth. Now they describe this whole experience, and it's like a scene out of Platoon. Like, they come in a helicopter. They see this. I mean, if you haven't heard about the Woodstock reunion concert, it's infamous, right? There's a great documentary on it out there. But anyway, they come in this helicopter, and it's just this nasty, kept, poorly run mess of all of these stupid Gen X guys like me doing wrong things. They land, they start putting on a show, and war breaks out, and they literally have to run off of the stage, jump in the helicopter, and get away before they're killed.
Woodstock 94, back in the day.
All right.
Okay, let's go to another one of the biggest and heaviest hitters on the album. Next song on the album is called Basket Case.
Do you have the time to listen to me whine about nothing and everything all at once? I am one of those melodramatic fools, neurotic to the bone, no doubt about it.
So I love how this one starts off differently. You can tell it's the same guitar, but he's got it muted. He's got his palm on the strings, and this is just him and the guitar with these muted strings. And then you can hear these little plinks and pops of Trey just putting the little accent marks of foreshadowing on what's to come for the first 30 seconds of the song.
Right.
And then, in full punk passion, they come crashing in.
It explodes, right?
Yeah.
explodes with energy.
Yeah.
This was the second single released August 1st, 1994. It was number one on the U.S. Hot Alternative for 5 straight weeks. Got a Grammy nomination for the best rock vocal performance, over 1 billion streams on Spotify. This is a gangbuster song.
Sometimes I give myself the creeps. Sometimes my mind plays tricks on me. It all keeps adding up. I think I'm cracking up. Am I just paranoid?
To me, this is the defining song of Green Day. Like, I love Good Riddance. I love it a lot. That was the first Green Day album that I bought, was Nimrod.
Right.
But Good Riddance is a departure from what Green Day is. This song, to me, defines the band and their staying power.
I can't really argue with that, except for When I Come Around is massive, and Good Riddance is off the chart humongous.
Yeah.
By the way, this song was written by Billy Joe Armstrong in Glasgow, Scotland, while he was on crystal meth.
Don't do drugs, kids.
Written about his struggle with anxiety and panic disorder. Okay, so this video.
Yes, they wheel Trey up to his drums.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Kind of based on One Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest.
Very much that vibe, yeah.
We talked about Jack Nicholson, as a matter of fact, earlier in the episode.
He losing his cool just a little bit there. He was not Trey cool.
That's it. All right, are we done? I mean, I hate to be done with this banger.
It's an incredible song, but we got to keep going.
Hit stop on your tape player, kick it out, flip it over for side two. First song on side two is a song called She.
This is another incredible song.
It's a banger.
It starts off so simply, like the beat, the chord progression, the bass line. Just very straightforward. And then just before they really come in, you hear Mike really twist it up a little bit on his bass line. He really is the lead bass player in this band. It's great what they transitioned to from the simple into the complicated. And then with the chorus, you just have this awesome hook of a melody. I love it.
Melody on top of drums and power chords.
Yeah.
This song is another song written about Amanda, the girl who dumped him and moved away in the Peace Corps. Moved to Ecuador.
Yeah. She was the name of a poem, a feminist poem that Amanda had given him. And so after he got it, he wrote another poem called She for her, for Amanda. And then Amanda moved away and he was like, yeah, maybe I'll use this poem as a song.
Yep. He gave her his heart and she gave him a pen.
You did not just quote a George Michael Christmas song, did you?
No.
Okay.
I was quoting Say Anything, which you haven't seen.
But okay.
I love the song.
So it's very Beatles-esque in its melody, but unlike Basket Case, where you start off with just Billy Joe and the guitar, this one, you don't even get the guitar until it's 30 seconds in. They are taking a very punk approach with same sounding guitar, same sounding bass, definite punk drums, but they're mixing and twisting and doing fancy stuff to make each of these songs unique. They all have the same feel. They all have the same vibe and tone about them, but they're all unique songs. Really well done.
Love it.
So we should mention that the producer on this one is Rob Cavallo. He's the guy from Warner Brothers who said, I want to sign these guys.
Okay.
And obviously you mentioned that they had been courted by several other people. He's an A&R guy with Reprise. And they said, unlike everybody else who talked to us, he talked to us and he's like, well, play some songs for me. And they did, you know, some Beatles covers or whatever. And he was like, oh, well, here, let me play some. And he started playing with them. And they're like, oh, this guy's like one of us.
Uh-huh.
And that's why they signed with him. And that not only does he sign them as their A&R guy, he produces their first album and several other albums after that.
You know, that's incredible. What a great story that is. But, you know, we talked about how their goal initially was 200,000 albums sold for this one. At one point, this album was selling 400,000 copies a week.
Crazy. It's crazy.
Massive success.
Yep.
Okay, let's move on to the next song on the album. It's called Sassafras Roots. Okay, I don't know if you know about this girl named Amanda that broke Billy Joe Armstrong's heart.
Yeah, she's come up a few times now.
This is the third song we've talked about how she is mentioned, and right before Dookie took off, she dumped him, moved away to Ecuador, joined the Peace Corps.
Yeah, this one sounds a little bit more like their first couple of albums. This is not as polished, I guess, as the other ones are.
Okay.
But it's okay. It's not my favorite on the album, honestly, but it's fine.
It's fine.
It's not a skipper, but it is kind of a filler.
Well, let's move on to another big, big, big hitter.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. 10th track on the album. Yes, we have five more to go after 10, but here it is, When I Come Around. So Jason, did poor Billy Joe ever get over the heartbreak of Amanda?
He did. He actually met a girl named Adrienne Nesser who became his girlfriend and is now his wife. They've been married for over 30 years.
Yeah. So he meets her back when they're on their Kerplunk tour, right?
Yeah.
And she has a boyfriend at the time, but fireworks weren't allowed in their unincorporated town. So when they would go outside of California, they would be able to be like, oh, hey, we could buy fireworks. And so their concerts sometimes would turn into a fireworks show.
Okay.
Which really means they were shooting bottle rockets at people. And so he saw her and shot a bottle rocket at her and her boyfriend. But it was all just fun. I don't know if you had any, you know, Roman candle bottle rocket fights when you were in high school?
Yes, I did.
Yes, we were very smart kids.
Yes.
Very wise. But afterwards, she comes up and she's like, hey, I've got friends in England who want to buy this album, or I got friends in these other places who want to buy this album. Do you have any? And he was like, no, we've sold out of them.
Right.
But she's like, well, are they going to make any more? And he's like, yeah, we're going to make more. She says, well, how do I get it? And he goes, here's my name and address. Uh-huh. You write me and I will get it to you as soon as it's out. Well, that turned into a little pen pal relationship.
Uh-huh.
And that went on for 4 years. And the band, somewhere in all of that touring that they did over that time, kept noticing, hey, we're booking ourselves in these kind of weird, obscure places. Does this have anything to do with the fact that Adrienne Nesser lives by? Because she would always find a way to come see him. And of course, eventually she broke up with her boyfriend and he's like, please come see me. She had just graduated from college. And so she gives her parents some excuse, like, I'm going to go see what work is out there, but immediately moves in with him. And he's like, let's get married now. Right. And she says, okay. And 3 weeks later, they are married.
The town that sets the world around.
And the day after the honeymoon, she's like, I don't feel so good. And he's like, well, we haven't really been being careful over the last 3 weeks. And she's like, well, let's go buy a test. And sure enough, pregnant with child number one.
And we just hit the 30th anniversary of this album. So that means that Billy Joe Armstrong, who looks like he's about 17, has a 30-year-old child.
It's weird. Weird. Weird.
Yeah. When you said Basket Case was the definitive Green Day song, I think there's a case to be made that this is the definitive Green Day song. This got airplay and music video play. To this day, I hear it all the time.
It's so simple. It's basically two chords for the verse, four chords for the chorus, but Dirnt is doing some cool hammer-on and pull-offs with this one, and it is... They've captured lightning in a bottle with this song. They really have.
I don't even know if this is punk pop. This is just good old-fashioned rock and roll, you know?
Yeah, it really, really is.
This was the fourth single. It reached number 6 on U.S. Billboard Hot 100 Airplay. That means, despite not having a physical single to sell, it was played on radio stations everywhere.
Yeah. They have a cool little thing with the, that they do with these lyrics frequently throughout it, like with Chump, where he's talking about another dude at the beginning of the song, and by the end of the song, he realizes he's the chump. Same thing happens with this one, When I Come Around. It's like this, you know, when I turn the corner and I'm okay, and then it turns into when I come around, people don't want to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the next one.
All right, next song in the album is called Coming Clean.
17 and strung out on confusion. Try to decide the role of disillusion.
Okay, for me, this is the first one that I get to, and I'm like, this is straight filler. We need to just get past this.
I didn't really... I wasn't super familiar with this album, and the lyrics are not blatant in what the meaning is. It's only once I read what Billy Joe's explanation of it was that I was like, oh, well, no, I didn't see that. But this was his struggle with bisexuality whenever he was a young man, apparently around 17. Huh. Said he never actually had a male partner, but those thoughts were going around. But that Gilman Club was... again, very noteworthy for being very open to all kinds of lifestyles, which was unique back in the early 90s, right? And the band that they would, you know, when they started to hit it big, the band that they would have open for them was a band called Pansy Division, which sang very detailed lyrics about homosexual sex, which when they started touring, there were, you know, some places that were would be like, hey, we're not letting that band play. And Green Day would be like, okay, that's fine. We're not playing either. So stood by their guys, but it's interesting. I had no idea that this was an issue that he had dealt with, and I had no idea that that's what this song was about. But there you go. Talking about, you know, trying to explain to mom and dad these weird feelings that he's having.
Huh. Interesting. Okay.
But didn't you're
know,
right.
Didn't know that.
Doesn't do much for me musically, and so I'm ready to pop on down to the next song. Here we go.
Ammonias Sleepus. All right, Dee, this is written by Mike Durnt, about two old friends who meet by chance, and then they realize that they have grown and become different people.
Yep. Yeah, another one that I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, there's some stragglers here at the end, I think.
Yeah, this is, yeah. Hey, Mike, you got any songs? Yeah, I got one.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the best one you got. Let's go with that.
Is it 2 minutes or less?
Yeah.
Okay, throw it in there.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go on to the next song then.
Okay, here we go. Next song in the album is In the End. All right, folks, sneeze and you'll miss it. This song's a whopping 1 minute and 45 seconds long.
Hey, this is straight punk. There's no pop here. This is straight punk.
This is great. I love this one. So I heard the song was about how he didn't really like his mom choosing his stepdad.
Yeah, and I heard an interview with him. He's like, well, my sisters didn't like him, but me and my brothers, we did. We thought he was kind of cool.
Oh, okay.
I guess there's just some family feelings there. So.
Well, there's not enough lyrics here for me to figure it out on my own.
Right. I do have a cool story for you regarding this album.
Yep.
So we just hit the 30th anniversary of Dookie, right? It came out in 94.
Yeah.
And we just hit the 20th anniversary of American Idiot.
Yeah.
And they're on tour right now. They're going to play Dookie in its entirety. That includes this song plus the hidden track at the end.
Yeah.
And then American Idiot in its entirety.
Wow.
If you can see these guys on tour right now, you definitely should go. I know they're coming to Nashville in September.
That's fantastic.
So.
Yeah. Wow. Great. Love it. All right. Next song in the album. This is the one I'm waiting for Jason to talk about. This one is FOD.
Something's on my mind. It's been for quite some time. It's time I'm on to you. So where's the other face?
So Jason, what did it mean to you if somebody said, why don't you FOD?
Well, I pulled out my 1986-87 yearbook and I showed it to you and up where right here had a buddy of mine write
FOAD.
FOAD, which means F off and die.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you to my friend in 1986 who wrote that on the front cover of my yearbook. So, yeah.
At least he didn't spell it out like Green Day did.
I know. Right.
All right. Yeah. This one is a hot mess is what it is. This is, you got Billy Joe and a not very sonic kind of acoustic guitar for over half of the song. Like, this is, I'm like, when's the loud going to come in? Yeah. It's a minute and 35 seconds into a minute and 50 second long song, or excuse me, a 2 minute and 50 second long song before the hard guitar and the drums come in.
And then it blows up in your face.
Yeah. I don't think he liked whoever he was talking to when he wrote this song.
Yeah, this is not my favorite. It starts out kind of harmless and then blows up into an F tirade.
Yeah, there's a lot of it. But hey, they warned you.
Yeah, they did.
Here's the title of the song. You can't be surprised.
All right. And then we have a hidden track on the album.
Yeah, this one that's coming up is not Billy Joe singing.
Interesting.
I was alone. I was all by myself. No one was looking.
So, another interesting thing that happened in 1994, well, December 21st of 1993, to be precise, was the release of a new kids series called VeggieTales, where you had Bob the Tomato and Larry the Cucumber.
Yes.
And when I heard this song, I was like, is this Larry the Cucumber singing right here?
It sounds like Larry the Cucumber singing about touching himself and thinking about other people.
Yeah, it's a little weird. I like it's got this little kid voice to it, so I'm like, is this got innuendo here, or is this just some little kid who's sad to be by himself? Yeah, no, the report is the innuendo is fully there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
So that, yeah, the name of this one is called All By Myself, yep. In case you couldn't tell from the fact that it's repeated multiple times throughout the song. And Trey Cool is not only singing, he's playing guitar on it. It's not a bad melody. It's actually, it's sort of cute. Yeah. If you didn't know what he was talking about.
That's right.
But that brings us to the end of the album. What a phenomenal nuclear bomb. I mean, they've got the perfect cover because that's what this was, a nuclear bomb of an album.
Yeah, I mean, this was a nuclear bomb of an album released in 94. They even come back stronger just a few years later. With Good Riddance, I mean, that was played at every single prom and graduation in the country, and still is, you know?
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road.
But they win a Grammy. They create this rock opera. These guys are rock and roll Hall of Fame type of guys.
Yeah, their next album after this was Insomniac, which they came on pretty, they were harder with the punk on this one.
Yeah.
They were changing the style of their lyrics a little bit, but it didn't do quite as well. And then after a little EP that they did, they came out with Nimrod and again blew our doors off.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us for this exploration of Green Day. We either have Live Throwing Copper coming up next, or we have Collective Soul, the Blue Album, coming up next, or we have Bush 16 Stone coming up next. You will just have to tune in and see. I hope you enjoy this journey through the albums of 1994. We will see you guys next week.
Thanks, guys. All right, everybody. Back by popular demand. New version of the Shirley theme song in the power punk style. See what you think of this one.
So much joy and the music kicked butt like nothing today. Then the world went insane, but that's when Shirley came and gave me joy in that same old way. Shirley is a time machine. Shirley, we will cross the streams. Shirley, this can't be the best there is. Shirley, you're my rocket queen. Got my back against the record machine. Shirley, you can't be serious. Jason Michael Scare.
spike the football. Surely there's a time machine. Surely we will cross the streams. Surely this can't be the best there is. Surely you're my walking queen. Got my back against the record machine. Surely you can't be serious. Tommy and Gina, they both knew. Bill and Ted, they knew it too. Keep Johnny's face. We're all digging in the wrong place. Surely you can't be serious. Hot shot first, Rocky became a trucker. Hans Blumy was the worst. Yippee-ki-yay, I am serious. And don't call me Shirley. Surely you can't. You can't be. Surely you can't. You can't be. Surely you can't. You can't be serious. Surely you can't. You can't be. Surely you can't. You can't be. Surely you can't. You can't be serious. Surely you can't. You can't be. Surely you can't. You can't be. Surely you can't. You can't be serious.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.